Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, and, the views of your callers. But I'm going to ask you not to call until we specifically ask for calls today, because we have a fascinating guest. His name is Stephen Halper, and, of course, he's worked in our government. He was certainly in the government, in the administration, in the Nixon administration, the Reagan administration. And he would be, really a classic Republican, a conservative. And he's written a fascinating book called America Alone, The Neoconservatives and the Global Order. Now, Mr. Halper is, if you're here in the Monterey Bay area, he is going to be at the Capitola Book Cafe, I think, what, is it 7:30 this evening?
Yes, it is, sir.
All right, fine. And, of course, you'll be signing books there. And this book is well worthwhile getting. In fact, it's a fascinating book because it talks about what most people really don't want to get into, and that is the fact that there's a small group, so-called neoconservatives, who have gotten us into a terrible, terrible situation in Iraq. And, of course, we have lost our moral standard in the world. We've lost our allies. They got us into a situation without ever figuring what was going to happen next. And, well, I'm going to let you tell the story, Mr. Halper. I mean, you've obviously been involved in government for a long time, and of course, you've held very responsible positions, not only in government, but now, of course, you've graduated from Cambridge, and, of course, you have several academic appointments at the present time. But why are you concerned about this little group?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for having me on your show. It's a delight to have a chance to talk with your listeners. I wrote this book because I believed that this small, unelected, relatively unknown group of intellectuals called neoconservatives, as you say, have taken the country's foreign policy on a detour. And it's a detour that moves away from what has been a half century of very successful and productive foreign relations. It was a period where we created the United Nations, we created NATO, worked successfully with them both. We went ahead to create the World Bank and the IMF, and that's been a very powerful force for good internationally. And these folks feel that those organizations are simply not that important. They're no longer an essential part of American foreign policy. And along the way, we have managed to alienate our closest allies, people that have stood by us throughout the Cold War. And I'm talking now about Germany and France and Italy and Spain, and to a very considerable extent, Great Britain, where I'm a professor at the University of Cambridge. Over the years, over the past 2 years, we've seen a remarkable growth of anti-American feeling in England, which is really very sad because these are people who want to like us. So those are some of the reasons I wrote the book.
All right, fine. And I think that as we get further and further into the book and into this small handful of people who've been positioning themselves for several decades to take over control of our government, and they've amazingly done this, and there are not that many of them. They have a different vision. They have a different view. But, of course, it's going to be, and I certainly agree with them, Mr. Halper, that this is disastrous for America, for our foreign policy. We're going to get back into the neoconservative movement in just a moment as our other stations begin to join us. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And this afternoon we have with us as a special guest, Mr. Stephen Halper. And for those of you who are in the Monterey Bay area, he's going to be signing books at the Capitola Book Cafe on 41st Avenue here in Santa Cruz at 7:30 this evening. His book, America Alone, The Neoconservatives and the Global Order, is must reading for anybody who wants the background of this small group that set out many years ago to transform America. Now, they call themselves conservatives, and yet, of course, they're not my sort of conservative. They're in favor of the welfare state. They're in favor, certainly, of a more or less free economy. But, of course, they want America involved in foreign affairs, and very aggressively, and they see nothing at all wrong with preemptive wars. And they have an entirely different vision of American foreign policy, and yet, by hijacking our foreign policy, they've plunged us into a war that will have, I believe, disastrous consequences. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that you make some very excellent points. The neoconservatives have, Dr. Stan, you may know that they began really in the 1930s, and they sat in the cafeteria at City College of New York. They sat in Alcove 1, and the Trotskyites sat in Alcove 2.
And some of them were Trotskyites themselves, weren't they?
Well, they were mainly socialists, this group were, but they argued with the Trotskyites, and they both came from a authoritarian leftist tradition. And, you know, that was a time when there was great sympathy with socialism, and these folks and their antecedents didn't see too many problems with Soviet Russia at that time. Over the years, in the 40s and 50s, this movement developed into a very broad and dynamic intellectual movement. They were concerned about metaphysics, the social safety net. They were concerned about freedom of speech and a variety of things. And then with the Vietnam War, all of them being Democrats, when the Democrats started to take the view through McCarthy and McGovern that America was a force for, had been an evil force in Vietnam, these folks split. They came over to the Republican Party because they wanted to emphasize America's involvement internationally, and they believed that we'd done the right thing in Vietnam. And so my point here is that they did very well for us through the Reagan administration when they focused on the Soviet Union, they helped on missile and technology issues. It is after the fall of the Soviet Union and after the Gulf War that the neoconservative movement seems to have really gone awry. In the sense that...
Could you hold that thought for just a minute? We want to bring our other stations right back with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. Stephen Halper, and of course he's a professor at Cambridge University. Although he is an American, he's been involved in our government offices and government activities for many years, having been served with in the Nixon and the Ford and then the Reagan administration. So, but anyway, you pick up the story. You're saying that the neoconservative movement seemed to function fairly well in the Reagan administration, but after that, why, of course, they began during the 1990s, they began to become increasingly prominent and effective, and of course, by the time of the second Bush administration, they were in key positions in government, and really, through the machinations of people like Mr. Wolfowitz and of course, Irving Kristol and William Kristol and Richard Pearl and the other. And I'll let you name these people, but they have really brought us into this war, which I don't think the average individual wanted here in America, and they've used propaganda to convince us of things that just weren't true to justify a totally unnecessary war. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think certainly they did. They had a plan for the Middle East. The movement, which was very broad, as I said, it devolved to a single focus on the Middle East and was only focused on foreign affairs. And they wanted to remove Saddam Hussein from power all the way back to 1992. And so when we had 9/11, they took a plan out of the drawer, they dusted it off, and they said, here's the way to do it. Let's take down the Saddam Hussein regime in Iraq. And, of course, they, in fact, proposed that rather than attacking Afghanistan first. They were rebuffed in that, of course, but after Afghanistan, they rose again, and they pressed the administration, through the Defense Department particularly, and here we have the war in Iraq. The problem, of course, is that having won the war, we're having great difficulty winning the peace because they hadn't thought through just exactly how they would generate a market democracy in this Islamic country.
But what happens if the people don't want a democracy there? I mean, do we have the right to impose our views not only on them, but I heard a speech by the president, I think June 2nd or 3rd, to the Air Force Academy. He's talking about decades because we're going to impose democracy on all of the Middle East.
Well, you raise an excellent point. I mean, I think democracy is a wonderful process. It works very well for us. We're all, together with the Europeans, products of the Enlightenment. We understand why this is a system that maximizes individual growth and freedom, but areas of the Middle East and perhaps other areas of the world don't see it that way. And it's not clear to me that we have the right to impose this system on these other peoples. After all, they've got ancient cultures. They've worked reasonably well. Nobody denies that it is a tremendous benefit to have this savage dictator out of office. And indeed, we did succeed in that. But the question is, did we have to put American boys and men and women on the ground? Was it necessary for us to take this step? Because it's very unclear that Saddam Hussein represented an immediate threat to the United States. There was no imminent threat, and there was no requirement that we move to war in this circumstance.
But that's what the president said. He insisted it was imminent threat. That's the reason we went to war, and that's what Dick Cheney kept saying over and over again. And of course, I think most people really believe that that Saddam Hussein was working with Osama bin Laden. They were plotting our demise.
Well, that is the line that the administration put out, and what they did is they used a lot of very sort of I have to call them weasel words. They'd say, well, you know, they might have a relationship with Al-Qaeda. It looks as if they were involved in September 11th. We think that there's every reason to believe that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. But the fact is, as we look back on these claims, this conditional arrangement that the government proposed was simply that. It was a possibility, but the fact is there is absolutely no proof at this time that any of those three things is true. So we were moved into a conflict on the possibility that those things were true and without an imminent threat. And let me ask you this, Dr. Sam. Here we had a circumstance in Iraq where we had coverage of the North and the South through no-fly zones. We had satellites covering the entire country, knew everything that moved. UN inspectors were in and out looking at for weapons of mass destruction. And look, it wasn't ideal. It wasn't a perfect process, but we knew more or less what was going on there. We had some intelligence sources on the ground. We had support from our allies, support from the UN. And the cost was minimal compared to what we've got right now. Now, that was a policy. It was a policy without military commitment, without huge dollar commitments, and it preserved American credibility. And my question is, diplomacy is a tough business, but my question is, was it not possible to continue with that relatively low-risk policy?
Well, you won't get any argument at all from me. I'm very much against what's happened. But what we've got is a situation, and as you point out in your book, the members of the Project for the New American Century, the Suna Pinak, a new neoconservative group, has said, look, we can't get out. Now, if we pulled out, there'd be chaos. If we pulled out, it would be looked upon as America, a sign of weakness. We would lose our respect throughout the world. We'd lose our moral position. And one of the points you make repeatedly is we have lost our moral position in the world. And this is what they're saying. If we pull out now, we're going to lose our moral position in the world.
The neoconservatives saying that about
right.
Us in Iraq, yeah. I think, you know, that they just see the world really in a very odd way.
I'm simply quoting your book. I mean, I'm quoting what you said that William Crystal had said. And you know, this is the position they put us into, not old proverbial between Iraq and a hard place.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Of course, one of the problems we've had with this is that because we're so wrapped up with the Iraq problem, we've not spent time thinking about the nuclear program next door in Iran. And we've also made very little progress on the nuclear program in North Korea. And top management in the national security system in Washington hasn't paid sufficient attention to China. So it's not as if the rest of the world just stands still while America focuses on Iraq. Everyone else is going about their business and looking for their to promote their own interests. But we're busy wrapped around the axle in Iraq and, frankly, not making much progress.
Well, let's get into some of the background, because your book goes into the background of where these ideas of the neoconservatives come from. And you talk about a man named Leo Strauss, who was a professor there at University of Chicago. Perhaps we could touch on this, because, although a lot of people tend to say, the neoconservative movement doesn't have much to do with him, and yet, of course, he really does play an important part in the thought process, doesn't he?
Well, Leo Strauss is a very mysterious figure, and he's somewhat vague. He was a man who extolled the virtues of the classics. He was a great fan of Thucydides, and he believed that modern society in many ways had eroded the purity of values and morality in a society which was very observant of its religious practices. And he decried this movement away from God and towards a more secular society. So he was very much driven by values. And there were a number of neoconservatives who were influenced by him. Certainly one of them was a man named Alfred Wolfstetter. And Wolfstetter, with that general framework, was able to think about modern weapon systems in new ways. For example, he looked at the cruise missile, which at the time was stationed on submarines and large battleships and so on, and he realized that with some additional work, this missile could be made very, very precise. And were that to succeed, it could lead to a new type of warfare where the U.S. didn't have to worry so much about massive civilian casualties because it could pinpoint a target and take out, let's say, the third floor of a certain building in another city. So the combination of this values-driven concept of policy, in other words, an ideological policy, with a new weapons capability are two of the things that characterize the neoconservatives. To tell it another way, in diplomacy you have a basket of tools. You've got trade, finance, personal relations with other politicians and diplomats. You can put the squeeze on another country by economically in various ways, or if forced to, you can move to military, to use military force.
And of course, this really seems, these ideas of this gentleman really seem to be the basis of what Donald Rumsfeld is doing today, and of course, trying to cut back on the number of boots on the ground, as it were, and use the sophisticated weapons of special forces, and the airstrikes. This is what they did in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, when we first went in, we killed 31,000, at least according to the book, Hunt for Bin Laden, killed 31,000 of the enemy with hardly any loss of life. One or two of our forces were killed.
Isn't that remarkable?
Well, it is, but it's terrifying to think, you know,
terrifying.
Because every one of those is a human being.
That's right.
Made in the image and likeness of God.
Yep.
And I believe war is a terrible thing, and I don't think we should ever go to war unless we are threatened. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest this afternoon. Professor Stephen Halper, who is a professor at Cambridge University. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierney. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Stephen Halper, and we're talking about his book, America Alone, the Neoconservatives, and the Global Order. And we were just talking about really the focus on the military use and the willingness to go use preemptive war as almost seemed to be a hallmark of many of the people within this neoconservative movement. And, of course, the sophistication of our military is truly amazing. And as we were just mentioning, when we went into Afghanistan right after 9/11, it was mostly special forces working with the Northern Alliance. And during the initial stages of that war, 31,000 of the enemy, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, were killed, and we lost if we lost five people, I'd be very surprised. And, of course, Mr. Halper was commenting, this is an amazing military accomplishment, and the truth of the matter is it really is. I mean, this would revolutionize the warfare throughout the world, wouldn't you say?
I would, indeed. And I think that when you have awesome power of this kind, you've got to use it with great care and great restraint. And the points that we were talking about, Dr. Stan, are that diplomacy has a lot of options, but the neoconservatives moved to the use of force earlier than regular conservatives. What folks who have been in the diplomatic business for half a century with President Nixon and Ford and Reagan and Bush, that is to say Bush's father, we're looking for a foreign policy that is risk-sensitive, alliance-oriented, works with the UN, works with NATO, maybe a bit on the boring side, nothing terribly exciting, but not adventurous, not a policy which injects American force into regions with the view to changing them. These kinds of efforts have almost without exception been unsuccessful. Even looking at Kosovo and Bosnia, former Yugoslav republics, those places are still struggling mightily with the creation of any form of democratic process.
And, of course, your point is that the neoconservatives were working behind the scenes pushing this?
Yes, they were. I mean, it's very interesting, actually, to think about how we moved from the time at the end of, I know it's a long time ago, but end of World War One, when the notion of sovereignty, a nation's sovereignty, was something that you never penetrated. If you did, you had a war on your hands, no questions asked. But in the 1980s, the World Bank and the IMF started saying to countries, look, if you guys want additional funds, you want more loans, you're going to have to make changes within your country in order to serve the interest of a variety of different groups. So sovereignty, you know, the camel's nose got under the tent with those policies, and sovereignty was reduced somewhat with that process. President Clinton took it a step further. He said, civil liberties are being violated in Yugoslavia, and we're not going to stand by and allow this. We are going to intervene to prevent these outrages. And Bush has now taken it still further. He's saying that we don't like what's going on in Iraq. You may be doing things that could harm us at some point in the future. Of course, he was saying it was imminent. And we are going to take preemptive action against you. So what's happened here in some ways has been a breakdown in the way in which nations are organized and the way in which they have traditionally dealt with each other. I guess that many of us in the Republican Party would like to see a return to a greater reliance on sovereignty.
Well, I certainly would agree with that. Now, one of the points you make is that there is a group called the Project for the New American Century, and you're right about that.
Yeah.
And yet, of course, there were only 25 people in that organization when it was organized in 1997. Yet we find the people from that organization in the key positions in the Bush administration. Here we would have Donald Rumsfeld, we would have Dick Cheney, we would have Paul Wolfowitz, we would have Richard Perle, until he wasn't one of the original 25, but he joined them soon after, but John Bolton.
Sure.
And Elliot Abrams. How did this small group of 25 people suddenly take over the Bush administration? We didn't elect them.
Well, that's true. What happened was that in the transition, that is to say after Bush was elected but before he took office, they formed a transition team. And on that team to advise the Bush administration were people like Perle and Wolfowitz and Bolton and Doug Feith and others. They urged that their colleagues and fellow neoconservatives be appointed to a variety of positions when the government actually came into its formal role.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We've got to take another quick break, and
sure.
Then we won't have a break until the end of the program again.
Okay.
four tapes out on the JFK assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a few weeks ago, Kevin DeMeritt of Lear Financial contacted us and asked if he could sponsor some of our programs. Well, I looked into the background of the company. They have an excellent reputation, so I think it's a good time to think very seriously about investing in precious metals. Why? Because we have inflation, we have a progressively devalued dollar, and we've lost almost 30-40% of our value of our currency, and we know that people like Warren Buffett are investing overseas. They're not investing in American currencies. Why not give the people at Lear Financial a call at 1-888-302-7111, that's 1-888-302-7111, and ask for their free audio seminar. Again, the number 1-888-302-7111. I think this is an excellent time to consider protecting your assets.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Professor Stephen Halper, and he's going to be at the Capitola Book Cafe on 41st Avenue in the little complex there, down below Orchard Hardware, and at 7:30 this evening, signing copies of his book, America Alone, The Neoconservatives and the Global Order, and the basic theme of the book, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the basic theme of the book is we're in real trouble because we've lost our allies, we've lost our moral position, and we're in really, it's sort of like a swamp full of alligators over there, and what are we going to do? And really, the people who got us there were these neoconservatives who almost took over the reins of our government. Would that be a fair assessment?
Well, I think, unfortunately, that they have done just that. I mean, they've had a huge influence in this administration. They came in because they had previously worked with Dick Cheney and others, and in fact, during the Cold War, they'd done a good job. But at this point, their focus on the Middle East and their determination to change the neighborhood there, as it were, and bring democratic market government to Iraq and other places has gotten us into a terrible situation. The problem, of course, is that these local cultures are simply not able to absorb the complex government structures that democracy entails, and as a result, they're rejecting it. Meanwhile, of course, we've got 138,000 men on the ground, and it doesn't look as though there's an easy way out of this quagmire.
One of the things you point out in your book is that when anybody is critical of the policies over there, they're immediately attacked and vilified and demonized. I know that's happened to me. I happened to question one of the members of the Project for the New American Century about the Patriot Act, and I was very concerned because there wasn't any mention of Islamic terrorism in the entire act, not one mention of Islamic terrorism. They've redefined terrorism, and I was attacked as being pro-Bin Laden. I was attacked as being pro-Arab and pro-terrorist, and have you run into that with your state? With
well,
your
unfortunately, I haven't, but I certainly have seen a great deal of that. There is an attack machine that the neoconservatives have access to, and it includes a range of magazines like the Weekly Standard, also the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, variety of programs on Fox Television, MSNBC as well. But you can find that if you attack the neoconservatives, that a range of figures and spokesmen will come out to label you in one way or another, and they're not at all shy about suggesting that people who disagree with them are unpatriotic, and it really is a tragedy. The Patriot Act that you refer to, it's just unclear to me if all of the provisions of the Patriot Act had been in place prior to 9/11. It's unclear to me that 9/11 would have been thwarted.
Well, it really is sort of a massive increase in government power over our lives. You point it; it really guts the very essence of our Fourth Amendment and many of the other protections we have in our Bill of Rights.
Well, it does, and of course, you know, the founders of this great nation never assumed that the investigative authorities, the police authorities, and the others would always do the right thing. They always assumed that these folks had to function according to very strict limits on the ways and the means they could employ to infringe on individual freedoms and perform their investigations. Now, the Patriot Act defenders will often say, look, we may not actually need this provision of, for example, tapping various kinds of communications or internet traps or whatever, but we need to have them in place in case we do. Well, that is not consistent with the way the founders approached these issues when this country was put together.
Well, my concern is that everything changed with September 11th, and they're using September 11th and the threat of terrorism to progressively limit the, our individual freedom. Do you share that feeling?
I do, really, yes. I mean, I think that there's a real tendency here to govern behind a sense of fear and to use fear of what might happen as a kind of a leitmotif or the author's voice between the lines that justifies a number of initiatives that they're making. You will notice that Patriot Act 2, which was the follow-on act, has not been able to go through, although I gather it's still under discussion. But there were some things that were considered early on, the total information awareness process. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, right. TIPS, they called it, right.
Yeah, that system, had people in Congress not become aware of it and prevented it from being put in place, that system would have prevented all of us from living off the grid at any point. You know, they were going to track telephone, credit card, internet, every electronic element of your life, of which there are many, and put them together in one place to have a snapshot of your interests, values, movements, your financial situation and legal situation and so on.
Well, you know, this is really rather frightening because my understanding is that even though the Congress said that DARPA, the defense, DARPA, which was Admiral Poindexter's organization, shouldn't do this, my understanding is that they simply changed the name and they're doing this elsewhere, and that there are elements within the Pentagon collecting dossiers on American citizens. And I know that the former director of the NSA, who wrote a book last year called Fixing Intelligence. Of course, he can't really say much because he's under the secrecy agreements, but basically he simply asked the question, should Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? So I think that was a way of letting us know that they really are in the process of doing this, and I'm very, very concerned that there are people who have a different worldview. They don't look upon freedom and value it as much as traditional conservatives like yourself and myself.
Well, I think so. I think that thank goodness there are very energetic objections to these infringements. And you find that our libertarian friends, although I'm not one of them, but the Cato Institute and others, conservatives, have been very active in resisting these developments. And I think, frankly, that because of the unpopularity of some of these proposed legislative changes, and because of the political unpopularity of Attorney General Ashcroft, that they have not made as much progress as they thought they would.
Yeah, but I don't know what they're progressing towards. In fact, recently in Washington, D.C., where it was very interesting, Congressman Ron Paul, and Kucinich, as far to the left as Ron Paul is to the right, teamed up together to repeal one element of the Patriot Act, and that was the part about checking on library books.
Oh, right, exactly.
And
yeah.
They got a split vote, 210-210, and in violation of all of the rules of the House, the Bush administration suspended everything and insisted on going onto the floor and twisting arms until they could keep that in place. And yet, Ashcroft says, we've never used it. So why is it so important to keep in place if they've never used it in the last 3 years? They've never had one instance, according to Ashcroft, where we have ever done it. And yet, this one little thing they were going to take back again, they pulled out every stop to keep that in place.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it just baffles, it boggles the mind. and you actually point at another point, another issue, which is that none of these provisions have what we call sunset provisions. That is to say, they don't end at any point. They simply continue. And were we to find ourselves in a situation where there were no further major terrorist threats, where we didn't have color-coded threats and so on, we'd still have this legislation.
And you made a point that in your book that once you get a federal bureaucracy going, why, it's pretty hard ever to do away with it.
It's very hard. It's very hard. I mean, if you look at the way that laws come together, it's very hard to find. Because, after all, once you create a law, you've got to have a bureaucracy to enforce it, and you have to, that means people are hired, offices are created, they have functions, they have people, and it's just hard to move people out of these positions.
Well, now you were actually part of the Nixon and Ford and Reagan administrations, weren't you?
I was in the White House under President Nixon and President Ford.
All right,
and then I went to the State Department to work for President Reagan, and I was policy director for George Bush Sr.'s primary campaign against Reagan, and then director of policy coordination for the Reagan-Bush ticket in 1980. I'm a 30-year Republican. I've been to most conventions. I've been advisor to the Republican National Committee and a large supporter in the year 2000 of this president. But I am deeply disappointed in the way that these policies have unfolded. You see, I believe that terrorism is an instrument. It's a tool which our opponents use in order to exercise their will. It's one of the only tools they've got because they don't have nearly the military strength that we have. And we need to respond to it the way nations respond who've had a terrorism problem and have managed to work with it, like the British and the IRA, or the Germans and the Red Brigades, the Italians, the Spanish, and so on. The way they look at it, it's a problem management issue. You use the police, you use your intelligence people, you focus very hard on specific sets of activities and people, and you perform surveillance and you contain the problem. What the Bush administration has done is to create a kind of national a kind of a fear about terrorism with, you know, highway signs that say report suspicious activity and color-coded codes that ask people to be either on heightened or lessened alert. What is the average citizen expected to do? I mean, what exactly do they want you to do? The answer is, there's not much. But if they were to deal with it in a more refined and as a project rather than as a national crusade, seems to me that that's the way forward.
And I certainly agree with you, and you point out that this is what the Europe is doing. And then, of course, terrorism is not a country. You go to war not with an idea or a technique. You go to war with an enemy, and yet, of course, the enemy is very, very nebulous. The thing that really disturbs me more than anything is that all of the information suggests that Saudi Arabia has been a major financier of this, along with our good friends in Pakistan, and yet we've done very little other than to scold them occasionally and say, you've got to stop financing these terrorists. So we're going to take away the freedom of the American people, but we won't put pressure on the people who are financing, or at least are said to finance, the terrorists. And there was a recent report out of the Council on Foreign Relations pointing out this very fact, and the fact that Bush administration had failed to stop the funding of the terrorists. That doesn't make sense.
My understanding is they've made some progress in identifying bank accounts and finance transfer techniques that some terrorist groups have used, but your point about the Saudis is very well taken. I think that there have been several reports that have pointed to the very slow response from the Saudi government, which only recently has become a bit better after the atrocities at Ramadan, when several were killed in Mecca. But still, I mean, it's sort of a day late and a dollar short. This kind of effort should have been underway within months of 9/11.
In fact, it should have been underway long before 9/11. Apparently, there was a great deal of evidence that a lot of money was coming from here and other countries to the terrorists, and we did nothing before 9/11, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I have to agree with you. I think that our intelligence services failed to make to give the priority about this kind of threat, make it a major political foreign policy issue. It just didn't quite emerge. I mean, for example, the FBI, when all of this finally played out, made huge changes in its the way that it deployed its special agents, and move them from other areas into terrorism. But they probably should have done that a lot faster, as you say, and they probably should have shared the information they had so that we could have had a more coordinated response. And I really think that 9/11 Commission and people like John Lehman and others for turning out a superb analysis of the problems we've had and pointing the way for us to begin to fix them.
Well, we're living in exciting and, I think, very, very dangerous times as far as America is concerned. We're just about out of time. What parting thoughts or what other issues would you like to leave with our listeners in the last 2 minutes that we have?
Well, I mean, I tell you, Dr. Stan, I think that the thing that Americans are a peace-loving people and willing to be very good global citizens. But they've got to assert those values. America works best when it goes with the grain internationally, when it utilizes international organizations and the allies in order to reach its own goals. And this administration has somehow walked away from huge numbers of assets, that is, benefits that we had with others, which they simply are not now taking advantage of. And the rise in anti-Americanism, in fact, there's a new phenomenon where you could see it as counter-Americanism, where they actively seek to thwart what the United States tries to do. This is a very serious problem for us around the world, and we need to cultivate these relationships with great energy in order to make up for the deep negative feelings that these populations of Western Europe now have towards us.
And I don't think that we're going to solve it by no longer calling it French fries, but freedom fries and freedom toast. And you know, this is the most ridiculous thing in the world, and yet there seems to be almost a coordinated program to antagonize our allies. Well, it's been a fascinating hour, and I want to thank you so very much for being with us. And I wish I could be down there at the book signing, but our guest this evening, Professor Stephen Halper, is going to be at the Capitola Book Cafe at 7:30 this evening. If you have a chance, go down and, of course, get a copy of the book. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Dr. Stan. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened to TWA 800 on the North Arm of the Eastern Coast of Yagami? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts, entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book on the world that will give you a more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and I'll be there.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that if you do not subscribe to my newsletter, you can go up on our website and pull down my articles on the Project for the New American Century. And if you can't get that, of course, it would be hope that you could actually buy a year of our all bound of our newsletters. But we've covered in great deal the background of the Project for the New American Century and their program to have troops stationed throughout the world indefinitely. In fact, in something that they published in either January of 2000 or 2001, they talked about how, of course, they're not going to be able to have their programs come about unless there is a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. Unless there is a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. Well, what do you think that event was? How are they going to get a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor? Well, you need to get the various letters we've written, all carefully documented from government documents, and certainly back in 1999, why a commission, the National Commission on Terrorism of the 21st Century, released a report, and of course it was co-chairmen. Both of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations, Warren Rudman, Gary Hart. In fact, 13 of the 14 members of the commission just happened by accident to come from the Council on Foreign Relations, as did 17 of the original PNAC members, and they talked about the coming terrorist attacks on America. There were going to be terrorist attacks on America. And you know, the most amazing thing is that report, you can get it on the Internet, or it's the National Commission on Terrorism in the 21st Century, Part 1. I guess nobody from the FBI ever read that, or nobody from the CIA ever read that report, because they kept insisting they knew there was going to be an attack, but they were sure it was going to be overseas, despite the fact that the Mossad and Putin and the Germans and Syrians and Jordanians said the attack was going to be here in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and let me suggest something. If you really want to understand the war in Iraq and how we got there and the Project for the New American Century, you need to get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story. That's Iraq, the Untold Story. And then, of course, you need to get my syllabus that goes with that, because you'll find all the documentation, including the material that comes off for the Project for the New American Century website. You need to get this. You need to read this. You need to understand what this is all about. It is a plan to bring about a one-world government and the destruction of individual freedom, and I fear eventually the destruction of Americans' national sovereignty. But then all of the wars of the last century were contrived, whether it be the Spanish-American War, the Boer War. Why did we go to war in the First World War? And, of course, did you know that the Japanese had tried to surrender for 6 months before the Second World War ended and we wouldn't let them? And that the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the invasion of Iwo Jima and Okinawa were all unnecessary? It's all documented there with articles from the papers written at that time. But, of course, you're never going to hear that from Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw or certainly Rush Limbaugh, because they're paid fantastic amounts of money not to reveal but to conceal the truth from the American people. So that's a radically untold story, and we hope that you will get that. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. That is the video. That is the syllabus, or get both of them together. I think that you'll learn so much from this. And of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video, you need to get those too. And you need to have the documentation for the things that we talk about. And of course, our Sustainable Development Syllabus, our Millennium Summit Syllabus, all of these are made of documents you won't find elsewhere that will help you understand the evil forces, the forces of organized evil. That, of course, were aligned against us. If you haven't yet seen the video, they sold their souls for rock and roll, either the 4 or the 10-hour version. You need to get that. Thomas Friend's book, The Fallen Angel, the story of the Led Zeppelin group and their album, The Highway to Heaven. Stairway to Heaven. You need to get the information to understand the true spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. Again, the telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Now let me remind you that we are having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 6th of November, and we hope that you're going to be able to come. Lunch is going to be served. It's going to be an all-day seminar. It's going to be an interesting time, interesting speakers we're bringing in, and why we've done this every year, and I think the people who've come have been very pleased. So you're going to have to call and make reservations, because, as I said, lunch is, we have to know how many people for lunch. The telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people who are as concerned about what's going on as you are. And, of course, there's a growing number of people across America who know something's wrong. And our job is, of course, to get them educated, to understand the spiritual nature of what's going on and the forces that energize all of these various groups, whether it be the Project for the New American Century or Skull and Bones or the Council on Foreign Relations or, indeed, communism itself, our terrible enemy, communism. Have you ever wondered why we keep financing communism? Why we keep, giving aid and our technology to communist China, the best enemy that our money could buy? None of this makes sense unless you understand the X factor, and that's, of course, what we cover in my book or in The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. There's so much available information available from Radio Liberty. What you need to do, of course, is call us at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'll be glad to send it to you. And, of course, we hope you'll want to subscribe and then join us in this epic struggle to determine if this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Tomorrow at the same time, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye. May the Lord be with you.